Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, I'd like to take a second to shout out the network that helps distribute our show, Armchair Media. Armchair is a collection of 50 plus podcasts, including ours, trying to localize the sports world a bit more. We've been with them for, I don't know, like 6 months or so, but we have really enjoyed working with Andrew and the rest of the team. Saints Happy Hour podcast, you guys have heard us talk about them in the past, but starting June 1st, Bet Online will serve as the title sponsor for Armchair Network, as well as our show. Pretty cool, right? Gone are the days of mowing our respective lawns. Now we are on to online sports gambling. So I guess that's a step forward. Also, I want to shout out the Nine Club. It's the world's largest skateboarding podcast, hosted by professional skaters Chris Roberts and Kelly Hart. Perhaps Kevin knows who they are. You can follow them at the Nine Club. To see all things Armchair, search Armchair Media wherever you get your pods, and make sure to check out Armchair's website, armchairmedianetwork.com.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Swedish presidents. No, I'm just kidding. Welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host and contributor to both thebirdrights.com as well as Bleacher Report, Preston Ellis. Today, we have a special two-part podcast. In part two, we will be speaking with Lee Ellis, formerly of the Basketball Jones at Grantland, the starters at TNT and NBA TV, and No Dunks with The Athletic. But first, we are leading off with Josh Hart, his impending extension eligibility. To do that, we have Mr. Chris Connor. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing just fine, man. Pleasure to be on, as always.
It wasn't a trick question. For a second, I didn't know how you were going to answer that. How's your quarantine going, man?
Well, I mean, that kind of goes into my uncertainty, man. I mean, everything's been good, man. We've been doing our best to stay out the way, man. You know, outside of long lines at certain grocery stores and standing outside with random people, I'd say everything else has been fine, man. It hasn't been that crazy for me. I'm an only child.
Fair enough. So you're used to this kind of treatment. Yeah, downtown Winter Garden, which the town I live in near Orlando, last night it looked like Times Square on New Year's Eve. So it seems that a large portion of the population is moving forward. And to speak of, or to continue on moving forward, let's go over to Travis Tate. What's going on, Travis? It's been probably a year or two since I've had you on here.
Preston, it's been too long. I'm glad we're back together again. Good to hear your voice. So excited. You know, you have just such a professional, clean voice. I just want all the listeners to understand how good you are. Good to hear from you. Interesting that you're in Orlando, considering the news that has been breaking about the possible continuation of the rest of the season. Good to hear from you, and can't wait to talk some Josh Hart.
Yeah, man. And definitely, I have been exploring every single avenue, because many listeners probably don't know this. I also work for Walt Disney World. So I've been talking to Bleacher Report. I've been talking to SB Nation. I've been talking to Disney World. But right now, it seems as if they're not going to let media into this event at all. Of course, that could change. But I think that's the way that they're leaning at this point in time. They're obviously like exploring different avenues. Anyway, we're getting off topic. But it's certainly been very interesting. But if they do let media in, trust me, I will kick my foot through that door. Travis Tate is a contributor for the Bird Rights. In case you guys don't know, you can follow him at Trabeta. You can follow Chris at Impatient Bull. I'm doing that off of memory, so please correct me if I'm wrong. Travis actually works in PR for the University of Illinois, but he used to do it for the D League. For all you young kids out there, you might not know that the Gatorade League was once referred to as the D League, developmental league. I'm sure you guys can put that together. All right, Josh Hart, let's go to Chris Connor, because you've got an article in the Bird Rights about Josh Hart today. Tell us why Josh Hart is an ideal fit with these New Orleans Pelicans.
Well, as Zach Lowe, mentioned in a February article, every team needs a Josh Hart. You know, when you have a team that's going to be built around Zion Williamson, it seems, Brandon Ingram, Alonzo Ball and company, a team with the bright future of stars, superstars, that type of pegging order. You need guys, you need glue guys like a Josh Hart that are going to do some of the things that don't show up on box scores. And overall give you a sense of grit, hustle. There's not a championship team that we can bring up that doesn't have a guy like Josh Hart. And if that's where this team, of course, and as it seems, are aiming to be between the next 3 to 5 years, he's the perfect piece, man. I mean, he's a good shooter. He's a good defender. He's an exceptional rebounder, as I was able to kind of go through in the article that I put up this morning. And that's not even speaking about the personality type that you're getting, how he's really opened his arms up to the city of New Orleans and just, he gets what it means to be a part of not just a team, but a community. It's a perfect type of guy to have long term in your building.
Yeah, I think he summed that up pretty well. From the get-go, Josh Hart was the first guy, Travis, to kind of come out and say that he wanted to be here. He confessed during the his introductory press conference that he told David Griffin, please don't trade me. But let's talk about his future. That's something that Chris just prefaced. In terms of long-term viability, where do you see Josh Hart sticking within this lineup? Do you see him as a long-term starter, ultimately supplanting Drew Holiday? Or do you like his position right now on the bench?
I don't know if I prefer him at either coming off the bench or as a starter. What I do think you have to say is that he is a valued player that can give you a lot of different stuff that you would normally need multiple players to accomplish. Like Chris wrote and mentioned, the fact that his rebounding is so good is like kind of a game changer for him because he's always going to find minutes. So even if you think he's not your starter, and you have him as maybe not even like a six man, but more of a game finisher, like anybody who's out there who can rebound late in games. I mean, that guy's going to find time on the court every time. Plus, if he's making shots, he's going to be incredibly valuable. So I think they have to think of him as like a sidekick kind of guy, like however they would value Zion and who they think is going to be good around Zion. Like this guy's going to be good around Zion. He's going to be good around anybody, honestly, but he's definitely going to be good around Zion. And I would value him right now, maybe like the fourth most important player they have moving forward.
Hold on, because Lonzo Ball, let's see, Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Zion. All right. So you've got him ranked ahead. Drew Holiday. Okay, cool. Now, a lot of our listeners might be thinking that they love Josh Hart's versatility, and it doesn't ultimately matter where he fits within the lineup. The point is, like Travis and Chris are both saying, is that he's a valuable playmaker, and he is super versatile. In fact, he played almost 20% of his minutes at the power forward at standing just 6'5". And like Chris mentioned, yeah, isn't that cool? And like Chris mentioned, rebounding definitely jumps out at you. Per 36, he is one of two Pelicans on the roster to average 10.2 rebounds, the other being, of course, Derek Favors. So let's go ahead and talk about that in a moment. But Chris, right now I want to talk about what he contributes to the team offensively. We know he can attack the basket. We know that he can shoot from the corner. He ranked in the 76th percentile this season, and that's going to be something that continues to develop. But just in terms of shooting, since we got Derek Favors back, he's only shooting 42. Hold on, I'm going to pull it up really fast. It's right in front of me. 41% from the field and 32% from three on 7.5 shots from three-point land per 36. What's the problem with the shot, Chris? Obviously, we're just going into his fourth season. What can he do to continue to improve in that realm?
Well, you know, I think number one, health is gonna play a role in Josh Hart having an ability to work on anything. His second year, he had the injury bug, pretty much end his season in LA. His first year, you know, we saw when it was when him and Lonzo busted onto the scene. From the minute he was, whether it was summer league or preseason, you saw that Josh Hart was going to be a player in the league. And when it comes to shooting, I mean, he shot what 39% his first year, and of course the second year he had injuries, and this year he's been kind of off and on. But I think, I mean, just overall being healthy and having a chance to continually work on it, and I mean, you have the perfect guy in the building and Fred Vinson. I think overall having the chance to work with guys like Brandon Ingram, work with guys who have overcome some things, and Lonzo Ball, JJ Redick. I think over time it's gonna help Josh. He's somewhat of a streaky shooter right now. I think anytime you're working with someone who lacks a sense of consistency and goes through the hot and cold streaks that he can go through, especially considering how confident he is, it's just a matter of putting the time and putting the work in over and over again, and being around different kind of guys that can help you work through some of the flaws that will show up on the floor, some nights.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and pass the same question to Travis. I'm going to sprinkle some salt on it. In terms of his shooting, when he plays the four, Travis, he is incredibly better. The Pelicans rank in the 99th percentile in effective field goal percentage, and he, as a four, ranks in the 99th percentile on non-corner threes on all threes, shooting 43.8%. Of course, those numbers dip as he plays the majority of his minutes at the three and at the two. So, Travis, just talk about Josh Hart playing the four. Do you think that long-term, alongside Zion, he'll get more and more minutes, or do you think he was just put into that position because of injuries to Zion, favors, et cetera?
Well, that's interesting because, first of all, so with every question about anybody on the Pelicans, I suppose it kind of always goes back to Zion. So it's like, well, in this case, are you saying that Zion is the five and he's the four? And then, like, who's the one, two, three? Like, in the past, that would have somebody like an Etuan Moore in there at like the three, maybe. But I think in terms of moving forward, when you, like I kind of mentioned, who I thought the best players were on the team moving forward, like you have your one, three, and five, and Josh Hart can intermingle anywhere from two to four, and including both the two and the four. And so, like I said, he's collecting a lot of good minutes there. And I mean, I'm a little surprised at how much better they are. Like 99th percentile, I'm surprised to hear. But I think generally he's, you know, always going to find better open shots if he's, you know, playing at the four as compared to the two.
Hold on, I'm going to look up some overall numbers from Josh Hart. We mentioned his effective field goal percentage. I'm just going to kill some time while I find this. You know what? I'm going to pass it off to Chris while I look up some of his on-off stats. Okay, here we go. No, I'll pass it off to Chris. So, Chris, I'm going to ask you the same question. Obviously, like Travis just mentioned, we saw a lot of four-guard lineups with Zion that include Josh Hart getting a lot of run at that three and mostly four position. In terms of going forward, we know the Pelicans had to go to that lineup, you know, just kind of to go up on some injuries. Maybe they didn't like their play at times from the four who would have been in that lineup in the Cole O'Malley. What do you think? Where do you think Josh Hart will fit most comfortably next to Zion?
Well, I think ideally you would want him in that small forward area. He's a guy that can play some shooting guard as well. I mean, but that's really why I would have him as somewhat of a wing connected to. I mean, and he's definitely a guy I think in some spurts can play the four. But I think until we see Zion, who continue to improve defensively and as a rebounder himself. I think you're putting your defense and some of the things that you want to do in regards to getting in transition at risk if you're running Josh Hart long term at the four. I think when you talk about his ability to get in the passing lanes, his overall length and the way he plays, he's kind of an off ball pest defensively. I think you probably having him better serve playing more of a two or at the three position than you would having him at power forward.
All right, go ahead,
Chris. I'm going to ask you a question real quick. How would you judge the Pelicans' wing defenders if they were to have to guard somebody like a great scoring wing, like Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, that Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, that guy? So you've got you probably start with Ingram, right?
I mean, you would like to, but I mean, in all honesty, Travis, I think that answer was kind of given to us when both matchups against LeBron, we saw you know, the Pelicans just having no consistent answer. They tried Drew Holiday
for a little bit there.
Yeah, it didn't work long. It didn't work consistently. In the first game, Drew started to get a little confident down the stretch. But as good as Drew is, it's not really what you want him at. I mean, you got they tried Brandon Ingram, but you know, if you right now he's struggling getting off screens, and from a straight perspective, he isn't there yet. Ideally, he'd be the guy you want, but I don't think from a strength and a physical perspective, he's there yet. And then they also tried Josh Hart, who again, you know, against LeBron, he gave it everything he has, but doesn't have the height, doesn't have the strength either to be down there. But I think if you're talking more of a perimeter wing like James Harden, we saw Josh defend, you know, James better than most. Same with Drew, but someone like Bron, who has you in the post, you know, who outweighs you and is taller than you, I think that's where the trouble kind of comes into play.
All right, we'll move right along. We gave you enough numbers at the four. I looked up what I was finding. Just in terms of when he plays the four, they're 5.5 points better than their opponents per 100 possessions. While they are very good at defending opponent shots, they rank in the 82nd percentile. They obviously get beat on the boards. As good as Josh Hart is, when you've got a lineup that small, it's going to be hard to patrol them. We'll start with Travis on this one. Now we inevitably get to the question. We've talked about his versatility. We've talked about how we love his attitude in New Orleans, how they want him here long term. But eventually the Pelicans are going to have to pay him. And that's going to be tricky because they've got to pay Brandon Ingram. They've got to pay Lonzo Ball. They might want to pay Drew Holiday. They still technically have him under contract for the next 2 years, though he does have a player option next summer. So in terms of how expensive they're getting, you really have to consider right now how much you're planning on giving Josh Hart long-term. As it stands right now, how much do you think he's worth?
Yeah, that's really difficult because, like you said, you got to take care of all these other guys. And kind of like what Chris wrote, in terms of being this, you know, you're viewed as a glue guy, you know, Brandon Ingram is going to, you know, have incredible games. We expect Zion to be amazing. And he already had like a really great rookie year considering he didn't play all that much. What about like Naw as well? Like there's a lot of considerations here that are going to have huge impacts, but I think the team right now has to value him at least under the three young guys. So I would value Lonzo Ball, Zion Williamson, and Brandon Ingram all ahead of him. And so it's like whatever you're able to afford, because I don't know how much they want to go into the tax, especially if they may, what if they like keep Drew stays for his $27 million, or that he gets extended, like he said, like then you're talking even more. So what I would say is that I want to take care of other people first, but I do value Josh Hart.
Before we get to a monetary number, Chris, is that where Josh Hart sits in your pecking order in terms of like 3 years from now? Who do you think will be, let's say, the five highest paid players with the Pelicans?
Oh, man, that's a good question.
Great question.
I'd like to think that. Man, that's tough. You know, the more and more I go along, I feel like Drew Holiday is gonna stay on this team, even if I have reservations about where he fits from a financial perspective. But man, I mean, I think you're looking at Lonzo Ball, Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram. Now I'm sorry. Did you say within the next 5 years or you say 5 years from now?
Let's say the end of Zion's rookie deal. So that'll be 4 years from now. 4 years from now, where does he sit in the pecking order? Obviously, we've got Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram 1-2. That'll be right about where they extend Zion. So we'll just put him 3 for now. Who do you have as 4 and 5, the 4th and 5th highest paid players? And if that's somebody that's not on the roster right now, you can say that too.
And that's what I was going to say. I think you're looking from a 4 and 5 perspective. It will be guys that aren't on his team. Now, I think one caveat is, you know, we don't know what the salary cap is, you know, what COVID-19 will have long term in regards to revenue and, you know, overall salary cap numbers and totals. But I think you're looking at Josh Hart in that 5 or 6 range, especially when you look at what guys like him from a 3-and-D perspective have been paid over the past 4 or 5 years. I think Josh will probably be somewhere between 10 to 15 mil per year if he stays with the Pelicans, and that should probably be good enough to have him in that 5 or 6 range.
All right, Travis, now we're going to nail down some monetary numbers. Obviously, I think we can all agree that he's probably worth 8 figures at this point. However, I mentioned his struggles with shooting. If he does improve those this year, and by this year, I mean 2020, 2021, before he reaches his restricted free agency, and the Pelicans have not extended him by then all of a sudden next summer, he becomes wildly more expensive. How critical do you think it is for the Pelicans to sign him now before he, let's say, breaks out in 2021?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to pay him a really long deal at maybe a lesser number. The CBA, what Chris said about the CBA, and Preston, you're even more of an expert on this than I am. But I mean, if the overall CBA is impacted by COVID, like it could be, although it sounds like they're coming back. So like they're not going to lose the massive amount that was possible, but still the number is going to go down. I mean, when I picture Josh Hart, I sort of like can see a future in which some other team signs him for like somewhere between 12 and 15 mil a year for 3 years or 4 years or something. That's kind of what I'm thinking. I have no idea, no reporting, obviously, and this is incredibly back of the napkin math, but that's kind of like a concept that I had, was that if he leaves, it's going to be because somebody like the Sacramento Kings or whatever is like, you know what, we're going to give Josh Hart a ton of money.
Yeah, just for our listeners real fast, I'll just talk about that briefly. The salary cap was expected to be around 115, 116 million right now. That's how much your team can spend and still be under the cap. Once you've surpassed that with rookie deals, bird rights, all that sort of stuff, then all of a sudden you start approaching the luxury tax. That's why the Pelicans are in a really enviable position right now, because they're not a salary cap team. So they can spend as much as they want on their own guys who are free agents. And I think about 7 or 8 guys are going to be free agents this summer. And I wrote about that on thebirdrights.com. Y'all can check that out. But the luxury tax was supposed to be around 140 million. So that gives you an additional 25 million to spend on your guys to bring them back. Guys like Etuan Moore, Derek Favors, if you're re-signing Frank Jackson, Kenrich Williams, that sort of thing. Now, the problem is, because of COVID-19, the salary cap is probably going to decrease. We've had numbers as low as 90 to 95 million, although most of us believe there'll be some element of cap smoothing so that, you know, people can get paid this offseason. You don't want guys like Evan Fournier having to take a 1-year deal. That's not necessarily fair. So I think they're going to do some smoothing and put it around 105 million. John Hollinger has it at 109. I think they're just going to cut the whole luxury tax this summer, because you've got, you know, teams like the Philadelphia 76ers, there's no way they could have planned for a massive deficit like they might be experiencing this year. So I would think they would either keep it at 140 or just eliminate it. Everybody gets a get out of jail free card this summer. But in terms of if it is 139 million and you've got, let's say, 90 to 100 million going to your top 6 players, that's Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Zion, Jackson Hayes, JJ Redick, then you still have about 50 million left to spend on rounding out your roster, like 9 guys or so. But Josh Hart's not going to count against the cap next year. The extension would take place in 2021, 2022, even though he's signing it now. Does that make sense, Chris?
It does make sense 100%.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, go ahead.
No. Just throwing it back to you, Chris, because I think it's critical that the Pelicans sign all of these guys now. They don't want to get to next summer when Lonzo Ball is probably, I mean, we all want to assume that he's going to become a max level player. So if you can lock him down now at a cheaper rate, if you do, like you said, bring back Drew Holiday, if you can lock him down now at a cheaper rate when the Pelicans, you know, are sub 500, and if you can lock down Josh Hart now, then you have to do it. So what are you offering Josh Hart this summer? You sit him down, put on your David Griffin hat. What are you saying to Josh Hart and his representatives?
Okay, so when I read your article, Preston, I believe you mentioned something like the deal Courtney Lee got a few years ago, and I believe it was 4 years, $48 million. Am I right?
No, I think you're thinking of the Solomon Hill deal, 4 years, $50 million. No, that's you're absolutely right. It's Courtney Lee, but I just like to think that. I think it's fun to joke about paying Josh Hart the same contract we gave Solomon Hill.
Did not just say his name.
Why would you do that to us? Why, you know that name. You know that name is forbidden in these kind of talks about 3-and-D players, man. So I mean, what I would tell Josh is, I mean, you're kind of playing into his hand in regards to some of the things that he said in the beginning. You know, you mentioned him having a conversation with David Griffin, pleading him, hey man, I want to be a part of this team. Please don't trade me. Josh was, he was the spokesperson. Well, David Griffin as well, but him and David Griffin, when it felt like they went on tour over the summer, talking about how great the team was going to be and different things that were, that were going to happen and their future. And Josh, one of the things he said was that he felt as if the team could be a championship of championship level within the next 3 to 5 years. Well, I would assume that that's something he wants to be a part of. And I think that's one of the things that you have to bring to him. I mean, he understands how the situation is working in regards to the other guys that have to eat eventually and that are going to have to get paid more than him. And, you have to see exactly with a team first guy like Josh, if that's something that he truthfully wants to be a part of or was just something that he was talking about in the moment. I think you mentioned that to him. You try to see if you can get a team friendly deal somewhere. I'd say in that $10 to $13 million per year range for him. And see what you can put together. Now, like you said, Preston, if you wait, you definitely risk having him play another year and then the opportunity of another team swooping in, like you said, Travis, with the Sacramento throwing him way more money than he may be worth, and then you lose them all together. I guess it really comes down to where he sees himself going forward and if he really wants to be a part of this team going forward. I think you try to go the championship and him playing a critical piece, but maybe having to take a little bit of a team-friendly deal to make that happen.
No, I think that's a great way to approach it. Sell him on keeping this core together. He's already confessed that he does want to be here, and you are coming forth with a good-natured offer. I think it's a fair offer in terms of what he gave us last season. However, Travis, Josh Hart and his representatives, they're going to come back and they're going to say, you're not paying my client for what he's done. You're paying my client for what he's going to be. And in terms of what he's going to be, an elite type wing defender who can also give you minutes at the four. We know that he can be a terrific shooter. He's shown us that he can shoot 48% from 3-point range when playing the four. That was only 18% of his minutes, but we have seen glimpses of what he can be. Not only that, but he fits perfectly into this team. He's not a high usage player. He can play off ball. He's got great activity. So he's going to say, you know what? I think of my client more as a Kent Bazemore type. 4 years, $70 million, we feel like sounds pretty fair. He's going to be a guy who might start for you long term. If anybody goes down, he's always going to be the first guy to be implemented into that starting unit. Here's our offer now. Take it or leave it. If not, we're going to explore restricted free agency in the summer of 2021. Travis, what would your response be to that?
My response is that, okay, so we've talked about his offensive. I don't think you can doubt any part of like his defensive value because he's able to shift all the way up to a four and still like hold his own. His offensive value is always going to be limited until he becomes somehow a better playmaker, dribbler, like shooter off of the dribble. Like he fits so well into that 3-and-D mold because that's pretty much what we've seen a lot of like his entire career so far. You're going to most likely stash him in the corner on possessions where like Lonzo Ball is running a pick and roll with Zion Williamson. Like that's a better option than putting the ball in Josh Hart's hand. So he can't be worth it, what they are. Brandon Ingram, obviously a guy who can get his own. And there's going to be other like valuable gunner types that you want to come off your bench as like a six-man role. you know, those guys are not a dime a dozen, but there's a lot of those guys that are going to be shot first and can score on their own. And those guys have value. So, you know, if he were to be essentially a more like versatile offensive player, then yeah, I would like love to offer him more money, because that would mean our team would be even better. Like, that would be a crazy, like, top four youngish players to have, with those three young guys and him. Plus everything that you laid out, Preston, about kind of the rest of the team and how so many guys are essentially affordable. I mean, he can establish himself as like a winning type player, and that's going to be huge for the rest of his career. Like, let's say, you know, we're like the 1998 Chicago Bulls. We have a great year, like for 4 years or something. We're great. We win a title or two. And then if he wants to move on, he can get paid after that, because he would have helped us win a championship. You know, that's the goal. That's what we want to do.
All right, Travis, I got to nail you down, though. What is your cutoff point in terms of what you'll offer him this summer?
You know, I don't feel good at 20 a year at all for almost anybody. So if we're not touching 20, and you said what, 4 for 70, like, I don't know. That still seems too much for me. So I'm going to stick with 15 max.
All right. 4 years, 60. And I think that's fair. And I think if that is somewhere where the two of them can meet in the middle, I think maybe a deal gets done. Chris, do you think that deal gets done?
I think so. I mean, if we're putting him in a situation where he's getting, I mean, because again, I mean, in all the research that I did, that 10 to $14 million range, it fits where over the past 4 years, 3-and-D guys are pretty much making, outside of 2016, where everybody was getting paid. You know, and you know, you brought up Kim Bazemore. I believe that was the year that he signed that 4-year, $70 million. I mean, or 4-year, $70 million deal. So, you know, I think if we're talking about 14 to 15, cool. I mean, that's perfectly fine. I mean, we just saw what let's say Tony Snell got 11. What was it in 2017? We saw Will Barton with 13. And I think Danny Green got 15 last year for 2 years. I mean, if we're talking, as long as we're keeping him in that range, and like you said, Travis, not going over 15 a year, for someone that doesn't have, while I realize what he can do shooting the three when he's on, and what he does in transition, he's not a guy that has a ridiculous offensive ceiling to be worth much more than that, especially considering the other miles that you have to feed on the team.
No, I think we came to a good landing spot, and we'll go ahead and get to questions now. I will wrap it up with this. I think that's a fair offer. I think if the Pelicans are not willing to make that offer, you get yourself into a dangerous position where, let's say, next year, this year, Josh Hart averaged 13 points and 10 rebounds per 36 after December 18th. I want to say that was about 32 games or so. All he has to do is shoot above league average from 3-point range, and all of a sudden he's a 15-10 guy. He's like a 16-17-10 guy. Then all of a sudden you're talking about a guy who might get 4 years, $80 million next summer. A lot of teams are going to have cap space next summer because a lot of teams are waiting to bank in on guys like Giannis. I can't remember who else is in the crop, but it's a very rich group. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, et cetera, et cetera. So there are going to be some teams who come up empty who are going to look to who's left and might potentially overpay. So I think it is critical that the Pelicans sign him. Now, Travis, let's get to some questions. This is a fun one. It's from David Rose. He says, talk about Lonzo and Zion being a match made in heaven. Can Zion really reach his full potential without Lonzo? I'm starting to think they both need each other in the best of ways. So, Travis, do you think Zion is one of the five best players in the NBA, regardless of who's on the floor with him? Or do you think he does truly need a point guard who's going to get him easy baskets?
Yeah, there's something about the way that Lonzo plays. You know, this floor game, he's very smart. He's so fast. He's willing to throw long passes to super athletic forwards who are left-handed and then can catch the ball and dunk it. That's Zion Williamson. So they do form, like, I don't know, what seems to be a really great combination. We've got to see more in terms of half court, obviously, because I think what happens a lot, and you just see this historically, I just love how we watched everyone watched The Last Dance, and so you can sort of like look at the 90s again in a different way. And it's like there's certain things that will sort of always happen. You know, your death taxes, like the NBA gets slower in the playoffs every year. Like even when the Warriors were great and Houston had those great teams with Harden and stuff, the game slows down. So I'd love to see them better in the half court. But there's a lot to like there. It's interesting how both of them aren't like super shot happy. And so a guy like Brandon Ingram can have his own role. And still those other two guys are also super important. So there's something about those two that I like as a combination. And then even on top of that, there's something I like about those two partnering with Ingram.
All right, I'm going to change this question slightly for you, Chris. Obviously, we all think the world of Lonzo Ball, but let's say that Zion was paired with like 2017-2018 Rajon Rondo, or you put him with a middle-tier point guard like Thomas Satoransky. I'm trying to think of other examples of guys who are facilitators, but they're not necessarily on Lonzo's level. How dramatically do you think Zion's game changes if you take him from a player like Lonzo and you give him like, let's say a top 25 facilitator?
If we believe that Zion Williamson is this generational talent, it shouldn't change much. And I don't believe it does. I think, like, for example, I look at Amari Stoudemire. When he was with Steve Nash, he was all world, you know, one of the best power forwards in basketball. But when he left Amari, when he left Steve Nash and he went to the Knicks and played with different point guards from Pablo Prigioni to Jeremy Lin and company, you know, that first year, well, Carmelo Anthony was at the three next to him, at the four, depending on how they ran. Amari was an MVP candidate. Now, of course, there's not another player that messed better with him than Steve Nash, but he was still able to find a way to be very, very productive. And I think it's no different with Zion. You know, Lonzo is the perfect piece for him. He's a person that's going to get him his shots, is going to know where to find him at. But I mean, the cream's going to always rise to the top, man. I mean, and if Zion is going to be one of the best players in basketball, like I think we all believe that he will be in due time, you look at where he works out at in the, you know, on that block position repeatedly, you look at how he gets out in transition, you know, I think that even if it's not exactly the same, I think whether if you give him Rondo or you get him Satoransky or you know, I think one of the comments in or put up Grievous Vasquez from Anthony Davis's first year, I think Zion is going to still find a way to be dominant. He's still going to grab offensive rebounds and finish, you know, or he's still going to get to the free throw line. Zion will be fine no matter who's there, but you still would like Lonzo Ball to be there because, you know, it paints an even better picture.
All right, this one we've covered pretty well, but I'm just going to sum it up real fast. Thank you for the question, Pelican Fever. He says, does Josh Hart get any say in this matter, referring to free agency? And of course, the Pelicans are probably going to make him an offer this summer to extend. He can bet on himself and play out the 2020-2021 season. Then he'll be a restricted free agent. And if the Pelicans so choose, Josh Hart can go out and get whatever offer that he wants, and the Pelicans will have the right to match it. If they don't want to match it, they can potentially do a sign and trade. So there are plenty of options at Hart's disposal. That's why the Pelicans have to give him a really fair offer, because if they undersell him at this point in time, then that gives him the impetus to say, I'm going to show you. I'm going to go out next year. I'm going to play really well. And then next summer, I'm not going to give you a discount. I'm going to, you know, go out and see what I'm worth. And that's what you're going to have to pay if you want to keep me. Otherwise, you risk potentially losing me for nothing. So Josh Hart does have a lot of leverage. Both sides will have a tug of war, and we'll see how they land. Let's go to Andy Coyer. I hope I said that right. Travis, he says, if we won't have cap space, why wouldn't we use draft picks to fill out the roster? I understand us being young, but I think we should embrace the last five spots as young developing talent. Now, Travis, the Pelicans have the 13th overall pick, or those odds. I think it's like 5% odds of landing in the top four. They also have three second round picks in what's said to be kind of a weaker draft. I think they have 35th, 43rd, and like 60th, whatever the Bucks. It's the Pelicans pick, the Wizards pick, and the Bucks pick. How do you feel about all four of these potential draft picks making the roster?
Oh, I mean, I would be shocked, especially by what you just told me with the three second rounders. You know, as teams get better, you tend to have a lot more like veterans who sort of want to latch on, and then you got older guys. Like, I don't imagine that there's going to be a scenario in which we have a bunch of, because we haven't even, like you mentioned Jackson Hayes, and I just quickly mentioned Naw earlier. Like, there are already young guys on this team that we have to be concerned about in the coming years. So I would be surprised if they, maybe they use the first and you just go with the plan of selling all the thirds for whatever you can get. It might be sweetener on some kind of deal. Who knows? But, you know, it's nice to have those in your back pocket.
Yeah, and they still could potentially bring
the worst case scenario is you just use them. And, like, maybe you find somebody.
Yeah, for sure. They can also draft and stash like they did with Didi. They can put any guys they want in the G League. They can offer two-way contracts, which are right now being occupied by Josh Gray and Zylan Cheatham. They can sell the picks. They can trade the picks. I think that's what most of us would like. If they could trade those picks into future drafts, let's say 2021, 2022, are said to be very rich drafts in talent where you might be able to find somebody pretty good in the second round. But as far as this draft, it's not said to be very deep. And like Travis said, the Pelicans are already flush with roster spots right now. They're probably going to have about 13 spots if they bring back Derek Favors and re-sign some of these guys on cheaper deals like Frank Jackson, Kenrich Williams. You've got the 13th pick. You've got potentially Didi. I think that right there puts them at 12 or 13. So yeah, you want to use the mid-level exception, potentially the biannual exception, maybe to add like a four, some kind of perimeter guy or a big to complement Favors. So where do you stand, Chris? How young do you want to go, or do you want to use some of those remaining roster spots to get some veterans?
Well, I mean, I'm with you guys. You know, you use those spots to, you know, to add veteran leadership to a team that, as we've been speaking about the whole podcast, you know, eventually is going to want to contend for a championship. I mean, hell, right now, you know, depending on how this thing plays out, they're already going to be contending for a playoff spot. And, you know, I don't know if the majority of, you know, of fans or media publications would have predicted that. And I mean, you look at the team now. I mean, they're tied for 10th in, you know, when it comes to being the youngest team in basketball. I mean, they're already a young team. You know, they already have guys that they have to. I mean, developing players takes time. You know, and they already have guys that need that attention in regards to development. You know, we have to figure out what Jackson Hayes is going to be and what he's going to fit, where he's going to fit on his team long term, if it's even at all. Zion is still developing. No matter how great he is, he's, you know, he's 19. You know, Brandon Ingram's only 22. You know you have an influx of guys that are already very young. I don't think you continue bringing in more young talent if you don't have to, you know, especially in the uncertainty of which is this upcoming draft and what that's going to be like. I know a lot of draft analysts have said, you know, it's really shallow after, you know, what, you know, the first 5-10 picks. I mean, I don't think that this is the one that you would want to be in. Like you mentioned, Preston, go ahead and trade it for future, either for future draft slots in 21, 22, or bring in consistent veterans to help mature your young leaders that you have right now, you know, to where they eventually become OGs. And then you can bring in some younger talent to fill out your roster. But right now, I think they're already fairly young. Work on what you have right now in reference to youth. You have Didi overseas that you're going to want to bring in. If you can get a steal in the draft that fits, that can produce right away, perfect. But otherwise, look towards the future, continue to bring in veteran guys so you can, you know, help this team continue their ascendance up the Western Conference ranks.
Great stuff, you guys. That's it for part one. Thank you to Travis Tate and Chris Connor. Remember to follow them at TraBeta and at Impatient Bull. Make sure to check out Chris's article today on the bird rights on Josh Hart. You can learn more about him there. Before I let you guys go, Travis, does the NBA continue the regular season with a full slate of games? Do they do an abridged set of games? Do they do a play-in tournament, or do they do just postseason?
I think... Well, based on the stories that I was kind of reading today, I mean, you know, they've got to play some kind of warm-up games. So I think they're going to do these warm-up games in, like, July or whatever, and then you get into the playoffs, and then you see what happens. I don't think that this is going to be good for Pelicans fans, but I think it'll be good for NBA fans. And so that's going to be good enough for me, you know.
All right, Chris, you've got to predict the future as well. Is it going to be finishing the 70-game season, playing all 82 games, play-in tournament, or playoffs?
I mean, there's been so much chatter around a play-in tournament. I really think that's what's going to happen. I mean, we've seen too many whispers, so many players speak out about it. I know J.J. Redick was talking about it on a podcast. I think it was yesterday or this morning that I saw it. You know, I had somebody in my inbox trying to tell me about the whispers around this play-in tournament. I think that 1 through 6 being locked in each conference and having positions 7 through 11 or 12 duke it out and have the other, you know, the other teams 13 through 15 stay home. I really think that's what's going to, you know, what's going to end up happening. I don't see them, you know, whether it be New Orleans and in the Eastern Conference, I mean, in the Western Conference. I know the Eastern Conference is a whole different story, but I really think that one way or another, they're going to find a way to make the end of the playoff seedings in each conference matter, as opposed to just going in what we have. And that's gonna bring more excitement than I think people really realize, versus, you know, it's just something that we haven't seen. And, you know, I think it's the right way to go. I mean, whether we're being biased or not, I think it's a reason that all of these players and executives are mentioning it. I think that there's some fuel to that fire.
All right, now we'll transition to part two, where I'll speak with Lee Ellis, formerly of the Basketball Jones, Grantland, the starters on TNT, and now co-host to No Dunks at The Athletic, get his take on the Pelicans and explore the different avenues of finishing the season. For now, thank you to these guys, and we'll be right back with Lee Ellis. All right, now we're joined by Lee Ellis of No Dunks podcast of The Athletic. This is super cool. I am a longtime fan from back to your days at Basketball Jones in 2012, if anybody remembers that. Thrilled to have you on. How you doing, sir?
Fine, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's certainly a crazy time we're all living in right now. So, you know, just trying to, like everybody else, just trying to manage and trying to get through each day, and hopefully we'll all come out of this on the other side a little bit better off.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to bring that up. You went from sitting in a room with Trey, Skies, Taz, JD. Now I'm assuming you're probably podcasting via Zoom. What has that adjustment been like?
Yeah, I mean, it's been difficult. We're not actually by Zoom. We just do it audio-wise via Clean Feed, it's called. So it's just, we don't do the video stuff. We only do audio only for the podcast. You know, it's been an adjustment. But again, now that we've had so much practice doing it, things getting a little bit smoother each day. And so that's, you know, it's one of those sort of situations where you just have to learn to figure it out. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I've done podcasts with the guys before from different countries. Like last year, for example, when the Kawhi Leonard news broke, I was in Spain and we did a podcast and I just jumped on the phone and did it that way. So it wasn't as though it was the first time we'd ever had to try to connect everybody across different, you know, sort of different areas and different situations. So it's been more now that we've just had to do it on a daily basis. And like anything, if you do it every day, you just get a little bit better at it and you figure out sort of what works and what doesn't. And then you adjust. So under the circumstances, you know, all our families are healthy and happy. So that's the big picture. You know, so making a little work adjustment there is really not that big a deal.
That's pretty cool. You were in Spain. I remember that vividly. I was editing for Bleacher Report at 2 a.m. when the news broke. And so I had to stay up until 5 a.m. writing about the implications of the Paul George Kawhi thing. It's pretty cool. You were in Spain at the time. Not a bad place to be when that news broke. Let's save some time, get right to it. There are 100 different scenarios, from playing to 70 games to close the season. Some have floated the idea of a play-in tournament to just skipping all of it and going straight to the playoffs. Which one is your favorite, or which one do you think is the most realistic?
Well, I guess the most realistic one is, in my opinion, to sort of cancel the season now and just go with the teams that made the playoffs, that were in the playoffs at the time of the season being suspended. So, I mean, that would mean, unfortunately, teams like the Blazers and the Pelicans miss out. But I really think that for the NBA, if they want to try to salvage the season, you almost have to just be prepared to realize the fact that it's not going to be perfect no matter which situation you choose. And therefore, I think you just want to play as much basketball as possible. And to do that, I think is the smartest thing is just to get to the playoffs. If you play 5 regular season games, or, you know, whatever that number is, before you get to the playoffs, then I think you are just sort of extending the chances that something could happen. Now, the other thing to that is if you're the Atlanta Hawks and the Pistons and the Cavs and the Warriors, you know, your season was essentially over anyway. You weren't going to be able to make the playoffs. So you have to wonder even how motivated and incentivized those teams would be to come back to play again, maybe 2 games, maybe 3, maybe 10. No one really knows exactly yet. The NBA hasn't sort of said exactly how they're going to potentially go forward with this. But I would suggest if you are one of those teams where your season was over, and let's say somehow you do make it into the playoffs anyway, you're probably not going to go all that far. You probably just want to start focusing on next season. So I think the best thing for the NBA would just be to sort of let's just assume the playoffs start as soon as they do get this resumption underway, whenever that may be, and try to figure out something from there. But I also, you know, again, no one really knows exactly what's going to happen. The NBA hasn't even figured it out. But if I was in the position of the NBA right now, I would just say, okay, you know, first round of the playoffs, best of 5 or even best of 3, you know, second round, best of 5, conference finals, 7, and then the final 7. That way then at least you can try to sort of move through these games a little bit quicker rather than try to extend it out because, again, it's a unknown situation. No one exactly knows what's going to happen. But I think it carries a huge level of risk putting all these players and people together in the same environment. Therefore, if you can be there, you know, for a quicker time, a shorter time, perhaps that reduces the dangers of some catastrophe happening. But again, it's so unknown, it's so unclear, and I don't think anyone really knows what the right step forward is at the moment.
No, I'm 100% in agreement. I am not privy to the knowledge of how much money stands to be lost if they don't play up to 70 games and get this prorated fee from local television networks. I know that that's at play here and something that we'll have to consider. But Lee, I'm going to put you on the spot. The Pelicans, you mentioned they're just 3.5 games back in the Memphis Grizzlies, along with the Portland Trail Blazers. David Griffin in a press conference this week, he lamented losing the chance to challenge them because the Pelicans had played the league's most difficult schedule. They had the easiest schedule in front of them. Memphis, on the other hand, had played the easiest schedule to this point and faced the most difficult going forward. Do you think if all the games had been played out, the Pelicans would have caught them?
Well, it's a great hypothetical. I mean, certainly from what we saw from Zion and the Pelicans, they after a terrible start to the season, they seemed to find the groove. I mean, guys like Lonzo Ball improved as well. Brandon Ingram was having a great season. So there's certainly a strong case to be made. But they would have almost had to go, you know, virtually perfect for the remainder of that season and hope that the Grizzlies go, you know, in a complete hole. And I'm not sure that would have happened. I think they probably both would have gone, you know, somewhere around that 500 mark. And I think the Grizzlies probably would have hung on. But of course, the Grizzlies had some injury issues as well. So, again, no one really knows. It was certainly an exciting storyline to see potentially Ja Morant and Zion Williamson, the number one and the number two pick, going head to head for that final playoff spot. Over the last week or so, that would have been fantastic story for the NBA. But of course, it didn't happen. But even still, I think no matter what happened out of those two teams, they were likely going to be roadkill in the first round anyway against the Lakers. So it ultimately wouldn't have had a huge impact on the season because I think, you know, even though, again, Zion played well against LeBron for sure, but I just feel come playoff time, the story would have been different. You know, you would have seen a LeBron, you know, locked in, focused, realizing that, you know, his ultimate goal is to get to the finals and win the championship. And, you know, the experience would have played out. But it was certainly, you know, considering in the past we've had some rookie campaigns not go all that well. And Zion's obviously got off to a terrible start there with the injury. I was down at his first preseason game here in Atlanta, and I couldn't believe the hype he was living up to already. I think he had 2 dunks in the first 3 minutes and just looked like he was an NBA ready guy. So for him to miss out on those first 45 games, I think it was somewhere around that mark, you know, it was definitely a blow to the season. But then of course he comes back and instantly has an impact, you know, not only putting up numbers in the box score, but the Pelicans started winning and started sort of moving up the standing. So it's disappointing that we won't really know the answer. And even if the NBA does come back and they somehow make it into the playoffs, let's say, it'll be great, no question about it, but it just won't quite feel the same in my opinion, because, you know, there was all that sort of momentum was moving towards a thrilling finish. And I just don't think it's going to feel the same in this potentially compacted sort of situation down there in Orlando, which is being discussed. So overall, you know, again, the Pelicans have got to be excited, because I think that the team is moving in the right direction. David Griffin's got a huge challenge ahead of him regarding someone like Brandon Ingram. What does he do? How much is he worth? You know, what does he do with Lonzo Ball? Lonzo, he started off slowly this season, but his shot started to fall and he started to improve towards the end of the season. So he's going to be up for his rookie scale extension in the following, whenever this season ends, going into next season. So there's certainly some questions, but certainly some exciting potential there with the Pelicans moving forward, that this team, if everything moves together and everybody grows together, that they will be pushing certainly for more than just the playoffs in the coming years.
Yeah, well, you would know about Lonzo and Zion, the man who diagnoses the very solid play. We've been highlighting some of their best passes this season, and they do have a good two-man game. Of course, we highlight Lonzo's, you know, full-court passes design, but Zion also will penetrate and kick out to Lonzo, who's been improving as a three-point shooter. Do you have any specific memories of this season of a very solid play from Lonzo and Zion? Or if not, just give us an outsider's perspective on what you've seen from their on-court relationship.
Well, so coming into the season in our preview pod, I picked Lonzo as most improved this season for a couple of reasons. One of them being away from LA and the spotlight and the expectations that he came into the league with. And for two, from some of the preseason games, like you mentioned there, I saw some really good early chemistry from Zion and Lonzo. And I thought, this is the sort of situation that could really help Lonzo. If he can knock down that shot, because that's the key with Lonzo, I think he's a good rebounder, he's a good defender, and he's a good, he's got good court vision when he's the point guard. But if he can't shoot, then it just sort of takes away all those other potential skills that he has, because you can leave him on the offensive floor. But if he starts knocking down that three consistently, or not even, you know, it doesn't even have to be a three, but a mid-range or a long two. I know that's kind of unsexy in the NBA right now, but if you can be a threat out on the floor, then it means that teams can't just leave you wide open. So that, to me, was the reasons why I liked Lonzo. Of course, he improved his mechanics as well. But then when Zion went down and Lonzo got off to a bad start this season, I sort of thought, I mean, that's probably part of it. It affected Lonzo's game because he didn't have Zion out there. So I think there is a potential combination there that could work. But again, the pieces all have to come together, and Zion has to understand how he can utilize his point guard to the best of his abilities. And that means, you know, reading the pick and rolls very well. And if he gets doubled, firing it out to the right guy in the perimeter for a shot, whatever that may be. But there are certainly signs there that I think that the Pelicans may have something here. I mean, we're not going to go crazy and think they're the next Stockton and Malone just yet, but certainly young guys beginning their careers together with two different skill sets that complement each other is the sort of thing that teams like to have. So I'm one of those people who, you know, with Lonzo that first season or two in LA, I thought this guy, you know, has skills, but he can't shoot, and that's going to really hold him back. But he clearly worked on his game there in New Orleans and had some progress. So you've got to feel optimistic and hopeful. And again, just being out of Los Angeles, I think, is good for Lonzo, because you come in there and you've got Magic Johnson saying at the press conference, "We want to retire your jersey." I mean, that's a ton of pressure. And then Zion coming in as the most hyped number one pick we've seen since, probably Blake Griffin. I'm just, you know, trying to think off the top of my head who else was that sort of hyped up. And, you know, Zion living up to it early on, you know, he's showing that even though he's a young guy, he's got that brute strength where he can just push guys out the way. I remember a game against the Thunder where he kind of just shoved Steven Adams out of the way, which is no easy task. So I think that if those guys can sort of work together and keep building, then that could be potentially a pretty good combination for the Pels.
Greatly appreciate your time. We've got one more left, and then we'll get you out on this one. You mentioned complementing each other, extension eligibility to guys like Lonzo Ball. This group, the Pelicans, earned the best net rating among starters who shared the court for 180 minutes or more with Drew, Lonzo, Ingram, Zion, and Derek Favors. However, Lee, Drew Holiday is 29. He can become a free agent next season. He can opt out of his player option. So right now, the Pelicans have a critical decision to make. Do you think he's a part of the long-term future? Or how do you think the Pelicans should approach a possible extension this summer?
Yeah, that's a really tough question, and I'm glad David Griffin is the one who has to answer it, because a lot of people kind of have talked about, well, trade Drew now, you know, get another young asset to build around those young guys. But I think I would look at it the other way and say, you know, Drew's a fantastic veteran. He's a great leader, great guy. And I think you want to have guys like that around the young guys, influencing Zion and Brandon and Lonzo Ball. So I would keep him. The price, of course, is going to be the big question, because, again, you know, Brandon Ingram's going to get paid in the summer. Exactly who pays him and how much, we're not sure. But, of course, the Pelicans hold his free agency. You know, he's a restricted free agent, so they can match. And I wouldn't be surprised if teams, you know, throw basically the max at Ingram. And you know, that whether or not David Griffin wants to commit to that is going to be a big question. But yeah, Drew's one of those guys that I like to have him around the team. Now, you mentioned there he's 29. So by the time the Pelicans kind of get to closer to contending, he's probably going to be, you know, 30, mid-30s there. So he's not going to be quite as good a player as he is right now. But that's okay. I would still hold on to him while this team is growing, right? Because you need some veterans in the locker room, on the bus, on the airplane, to sort of help these guys out as they you know, get to the playoffs and get some experience. You need guys around the locker room who can help these guys understand the process. I think the thing is with Drew, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, of course, if a contender, a team that's a little bit closer to competing for a championship, sees a guy like Drew and has him in the win now situation and offers him big money that perhaps Griffin balks at, you know, because they don't want to tie up too much money. You can only pay so many guys so much money. And, you know, I mean, look, Zion's extension is still at minimum 3 years away. But from what we've seen from his 20-odd games, he's going to get the supermax himself. So the Pelicans have got a lot of questions to answer as far as how they manage the roster going forward. I hope Drew stays, but again, I just think that there might be too much money out there that the Pelicans just can't afford to keep him, and that's going to be a tough question there. Having said that, you know, it certainly doesn't hurt to sign him to a bigger contract right now, believing that you can probably trade him anyway still in a year or two's time. He's not the sort of guy who's an old 29, if you know what I mean. Like he doesn't sort of come across as one of those guys who could already be closer to the end of his career. I think he could still have another 5 or 6 years in the NBA as an effective player, even if he becomes perhaps like a George Hill type backup point guard. Like, you know, you've seen George Hill in those couple of years there in Milwaukee play that role very, very effectively. So that could be something that Drew gravitates towards in his 30s. But of course, you know, you don't get paid as much. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, would you want Drew as a starting point guard on a championship contender? Possibly. But I'm not sure if you want to pay him, you know, huge money for that. So it's funny, you know, just talking about basketball again, because it feels like I haven't talked about it for so long, and you sort of got to dig deep into your knowledge to even remember, you know, how guys were playing this season and what was, you know, what was sort of leading us into next season. And, you know, I remember Drew, like, yeah, he was very good again for the Pels at both ends. You know, he's a very good defensive player, underrated, in fact, as a defender. So he's going to command a lot of attention. It's just, if you're doing that projected cap sheet for the Pelicans, you know there's a couple of big paydays coming up, and I just can't see everyone getting one of those paydays. Someone's going to have to miss out, whether that's Ingram, whether that's potentially Lonzo or Drew Holiday, or even, I mean, Derek Favors is not going to get a huge contract, I don't think, but he's an underrated defender, an underrated player too for the Pels, and I think, again, another veteran like that just helps the Pelicans going forward to understand the process. And, you know, the more veterans you have like that can only really help the younger guys who are trying to figure things out still.
I'm glad we could talk some basketball with you, get you back on the horse, so to speak. You guys have done so well over the years, not just for your extensive basketball knowledge and how interesting your conversations are, but honestly, you guys are just really entertaining. And I'm sure you get this all the time, but you, as a listener, you imagine yourself in this room with a group of friends just talking basketball with one another. And that's what has made your show so lasting and so popular, I would imagine, with people like me and all your many listeners. So greatly appreciate the time. It was a thrill, honestly, to have you on. You guys can follow him at Lee Ellis and follow his podcast at No Dunks Inc. It's called No Dunks if you search for it. Lee, thanks so much, man. This was a blast.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, to your last point there, honestly, that's all we are too, is just friends talking basketball. There's no, you know, we get a lot of emails and messages from people saying, you know, can you help us with our podcast? What do we have to do? And I'm like, there's no real secret source to it. All you have to do is just keep podcasting, keep working at it, and remember what it is that you do, and that's entertain and have fun, because ultimately that's what it is. It's about trying to have fun like you do with your friends. And we just do it every day. And trust me, we've done combined somewhere like 2,500 sort of podcast/TV shows. And even to this point, I know that after a show, even this week, you sometimes look back and you listen to it and you wish you could have done better. You would wish you could have done something different, but it's all a part of the process that you just keep on trying. So for anybody out there listening who's doing a podcast, just keep at it. That's all the secret is just keep trying, keep doing what you can. And you'll improve with repetition and time. But again, I don't think we've had one perfect show or podcast over the years, because you know you always just want to keep doing better and keep improving. And the only way to do that is to just turn up every day and try your best. So thank you for the compliments. We certainly appreciate it. And you know we like to hear from people who have listened to our show and they try to sort of get their own one started. But again, like I say, we're not hoarding any secret that we're not sharing with anybody. We're just the same as everybody else out there trying to do the best show you can every day.
Great stuff, Lee. Thank you so much for the lesson, sir. I'll talk to you soon. All right, that's all the time we have for now. Thank you to Lee Ellis, Chris Connor, Travis Tate. Remember, if you guys like what you're hearing, just retweet. You've made it this far. Obviously, you've shown effort. You like the podcast. Go ahead and show us, pay it forward, rate us on iTunes, whatever you can do. If you already have done that, just grab somebody else's phone and make sure you rate it on their phone as well. Really appreciate you guys hanging with us for this full hour. I'm Preston Ellis. Let's dance and let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.